This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we discuss the relentless pursuit of ROI. Yes, that's right, return on investment and return on inflation. We have a changing future with monetary policy and fiscal policy the way it is, and we need to prepare for it as investors by structuring our transactions differently, and we will talk about that on this episode and future episodes, of course. So we will be back with a fantastic interview for you and a guest today in just less than 60 seconds. Stay tuned.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn how to finance your next big real estate deal, there's a show for that. If you want to learn more about food storage and the best way to keep those onions from smelling up everything else, there's a show for that. If you honestly want to know more about business ethics, there's a show for that. And if you just want to get away from it all and need to know something about world travel, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
It's my pleasure to welcome Mark Gold to the show. He is Managing Director of the American Home Recovery Fund and creator of NoteWorks, and he's coming to us today from my former hometown of Irvine, California. Mark, welcome. How are you?
Doing real good, Jason. Thanks very much. And Irvine misses you.
Yep. Well, I have to say, I don't miss it, especially the lower taxes. When I went across the border that night I officially moved, I realized my taxes dropped by about, 55% or something like that, I think, was my calculation. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, nice way to give yourself a raise, real easy.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Just go across the state line. Haven't done anything about the feds yet, but at least the state.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Good. Tell us a little bit about what you do, and let's talk about the distressed asset market and shadow inventory and so forth.
We operate the American Home Recovery Fund, which is a series of a couple of different private equity funds. Then what we do is specifically buy non-performing loans from banks, hedge funds, and other private equity funds. And our fund's model and goal is we're the good guys. We're the guys in we're the knight in white shining armor. You know, we're buying the notes, trying to keep the homeowners in the properties however and whenever we can. So, they've been going through the rigmarole of going to the banks and trying to go through traditional modifications. All we care about is if they have a capacity to stay in and a desire to stay in, we're the guys that will keep them in there. So we really don't care about qualifying them. Everybody, you know, since 2008, 2009 has been through to hell and back, and some of them are still in hell. So we really try to make it as easy as possible. The model really started. We were able to start buying some of the stuff at pretty deep discounts, predominantly in the Midwest, where, you know, back a couple of years ago, we were able to buy stuff at, you know, anywhere from 10 to 50 cents on the dollar, depending on the asset and the area. And so it gave us a lot of room to be able to keep those homeowners in there. And as you can imagine from the investor perspective, you know, between cash on cash returns and potential upside, when you sell that asset, it creates a total win-win situation. So we've been doing that for the last couple of years, tapping into the hardest hit funds when and where possible, which we can talk a little bit more about that later. Just recently putting together another fund on a more of a cash flow model, a rent-to-own portfolio model. So again, taking advantage of the opportunities as they come about. You know, REO has been dead for quite a while, and now, well, you know, Access is starting to get back into that. So, you know, again, just playing very heavily in the distress side, seeing those opportunities and really trying to help, you know, at the end of the day, helping to stabilize Americans and help keep people in their homes.
What you're doing is you're buying defaulted notes, and are those first or second position?
We actually just bought our first pool of seconds, very small pool. I think it was 5 or 6 second mortgages. So everything to date's been first mortgages. And it's funny because, you know, I speak at a lot of events, and you get all the guys that have been investing in first. that are now trying to dabble in seconds, and you get all the guys in seconds that are now trying to dabble in first. So it's becoming a big crossing of the line, so to speak. So now on our seconds, we went the total safety route. We're buying only seconds where there's equity in the properties, which you're starting to see a little bit of more now. So the first mortgage is already performing. There's some equity, so there's very little downside on something like that. But as far as the first mortgages, you know, that's been our bread and butter for the last, you know, 2.5 years probably.
So, Mark, why are people crossing over, as you say, in the industry? For example, if someone was specializing, and a lot of times note investors do specialize, if they were doing, say, performing first liens or non-performing first liens, they're jumping into the market of seconds. And then if they were doing seconds, they're now doing first? Do they feel they've tapped out their market? Is supply diminishing?
Not at all. It's kind of weird. It's like the guys in seconds that are coming into first now, they hear about the hardest hit funds, which, just, you know, quick rundown on that. Out of the Treasury through TARP, they gave $7.6 billion to the 18 hardest hit states for foreclosure avoidance, unemployment assistance for homeowners, debt reduction. So, you know, paying down principal reductions and stuff. So the second guys are seeing that, you know, you look at the economics on the first side. If I paid, you know, $25,000 for, let's say, a $70,000 mortgage, and the property value is, let's say, $70,000, if I can get, which I have, if I can get $25,000 from the hardest hit funds to help that home in arrears and all that, I just got all my cash out of that investment. Now I still have a mortgage of $50,000 or $60,000. So they start seeing those kind of numbers, and there's a little bit of attraction there, as I'm sure you agree. We literally have one case study that we put out where, you know, that turned that deal into a 740% annualized return when you factor in how much money we collected in payments, the hardest hit funds money that we got, and then if we refinanced the guy out, what that would have looked like. And it literally, you know, we're getting a $90,000 cash return on a $25,000 investment. So when the seconds guys see that, that becomes definitely a bone jar for them. And then conversely, on the first guys, you know, we hear about, which, you know, again, this is where we're at, if we could buy these seconds at real deep discounts, especially if there is some equity and you are behind a performing first, you know, you're buying these things at 10 cents on the dollar, how hard is it to go to that homeowner and try to settle for, you know, even 25% of what they owe? You know, you're doubling or tripling your investment capital on that. Back in, you know, let's call it the old days, 4 years ago, when seconds were trading very low and people were buying huge pools of these, a lot of them are, at least on the seconds, were stripped away and kind of garbage. So you knew from your investment, you know, 25% of them you'd be earning, you know, you'd be knocking out of the park. You'd be, you know, be getting settlements, you get payoffs, you get all this stuff. 50% of it you might are going to be above or below the line for you. And the last 25% are pretty much throwaways where, you know, they've been stripped out in bankruptcy or foreclosure or whatever it may be. So for us, it was more that we wanted to at least explore what that looks like and again, test the waters out. But you don't know what you're missing until you go down the road on it.
And so the million-dollar question is, why don't the current holders of those notes just do those workouts themselves? Why do they sell them off at such deep discounts and let someone else earn that return?
A couple of reasons. First of all, the current note holders are disaster zones. The big banks, they have could talk to you for an hour about files that I've bought literally for $400 where there were insurance payoffs in the file. That nobody, you know, the whatever country they had their people reviewing files in missed things. And so this paper just gets pushed out through the limits. The million-dollar answer to that, and this comes down to, it was pretty eloquently put. We were in the middle of a pretty big trade, the biggest trade that we would have had done. It was about 4,000 assets from Bank of America, all low value stuff. So all $50,000 and below values of the properties, you know, Detroit, Chicago, you know, middle of the country. And the senior VP of Legacy Assets made a pretty profound statement. He said, because they were selling this stuff literally at 2 or 3 cents on the dollar, 2 to 3 cents on the dollar. He says, we're not selling the assets, we're selling the liability. So you stop and think about that for a second. You hear, you know, we all hear about these $16 billion with a B settlements from Ocwen and Citi and B of A. I mean, you know, they're just billions upon billions of dollars in fines that they're getting hit on from not doing proper foreclosures, doing all the robo-signing and everything else that, you know, that we hear ad nauseum on the news. They've already written a lot of these assets off, so it makes sense for them to sell 1,000, 2,000 of them to a bigger hedge fund or a private equity fund that'll buy them at 10 cents on the dollar, because now they just got rid of that liability. So think about it from that perspective. It makes sense. Otherwise, you know, most people think, I mean, this is like hocus pocus. Why is a bank going to sell you, you know, a $50,000 note for $4,000? It happens every single day.
That really is amazing. It really is. And it just begs the question, how come these banks don't get more organized? I mean, it would be worth hundreds of millions of dollars to them to just be organized. I mean, some corporations are really organized. Why is it so hard for the big banks? You know, I'm sure you've speculated and pondered that idea.
We lived, all of us collectively, just lived through unprecedented disaster and destruction in the financial markets. The banks were never, ever set up to be the biggest property owners, which they became, and to have the volumes. I mean, you think about it, you know, when B of A, and I keep using B of A as an example, B of A's biggest mistake was obviously taking over the legacy issues, which was all Countrywide. Countrywide was the largest mortgage lender in the country. You know, what got us to that spot was all the crazy loose underwriting. You know, if you had a heartbeat, you got a loan. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with a lot of the no income, no asset, the stated income, things of that nature. I mean, at the end, but before the world blew up, we used to call it the ninja loan. No income, no assets, no job. I mean, you basically, they were just giving money away. And somebody in there was saying, I guess people should be paying us back. So, you know, the banks, say the banks, but it's Wall, at the end of the day, it's Wall Street. Wall Street, you know, had a never-ending appetite to put money out at the returns that they were getting. And so it created this huge problem for the banks, which were never set up for the disaster. I mean, they had no disaster plan is the short answer of it. You know, all of a sudden there's 10 million, 12 million, 15 million defaulted mortgages. How do you deal with that? So we go to India, we go to Philippines, we go to Pakistan.
I don't know. You know, Apple can make 20 million iPhones, and they seem to have figured that out. You know, but it just boggles the mind. You know, it really.
Yeah,
does.
I know.
So I mean, this is what I call the tyranny of the collective. You know, I think Jefferson talked about the tyranny of the majority. I'm calling it a little different. And you know, that's with Wall Street. Of course, they don't care. It's not their money. They're just a bunch of criminals moving money around. Okay, you know, and it's not their money. So they don't care. Tell us about, what are your thoughts on shadow inventory? You have a shadow inventory roadshow, which I'd like you to talk about, but it's kind of surprising this late in the game here that we're talking about, you know, big opportunities and defaulted notes. You'd think a lot of this would have really just cleared the system and there'd be slim pickings by now, right?
You would think that. And it's funny because we're coming into that time of the year where you're going to start seeing, mark my words, you'll start seeing shadow inventory popping up in the news again. At the end of the year, the banks are clearing their books out. They're trying to get all the garbage off the books. So all of a sudden, mom and pop kettle in Mississippi is going to hear about the shadow inventory. They're going to call their cousin, who's a real estate agent, and say, hey, that shadow inventory is getting ready to be released by the banks. Can you get me some? And no, they can't, because the banks, you know, the shadow inventory that we hear about is actually this entire distressed debt marketplace. It is the defaulted notes. It is the non-performing loans that are being sold off to the hedge fund. So Main Street never sees the shadow inventory. It'll start trickling down once guys like me buy what we're going to buy and we start working them out. And now we've got a foreclosure that's finished, or we get a deed in lieu of foreclosure. And now we have that asset that we can sell. And that is the shadow inventory. So what we did, one of my biggest frustrations was, you know, being here in Irvine, Newport Beach, we got a lot of pretty smart money that wants to invest in the non-performing loan space. Jason, you'll appreciate this. I meet guys with millions and millions of dollars. It's like, yeah, find me some non-performing loans west of the 5 freeway. So, as you know, that means Newport Beach, Laguna Beach, Dana Point. Well, there are no non-performing loans there.
I mean, I suppose there are good opportunities there, too. No, there's none. Wouldn't catch me investing in it, but I know there are certainly defaults in those areas.
Yeah. The problem is the market got so stupid that those non-performing loans and those zip codes are going for about 80 cents plus on the dollar. So if there is any more of a hiccup, you just lost your margin. You know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when people were paying 65, 70 cents on the dollar of current market value for those, that was great. You know, Orange County, San Diego was hitting 20% annualized appreciation for 2 years running. So we picked up 40%. So your 65 or 70% loan to value purchase price just got reduced down. Well, now we're at almost at scary highs again in this market. So if somebody's buying a note at 80 or 82 cents on the dollar, there's a lot of gas in there that could explode. So what we did is I said, if I can get these guys out of the Newport Beach, get them into Chicago, get them into Indianapolis, and Indianapolis is one of the top five investment markets. I'm sure you're doing stuff on your cash.
I've been doing tons of business in Indy for a long time, and you know, I've owned properties there, and Basically, the rule for me is if the market doesn't make the news, it's probably worth considering, you know?
Right.
The high-flying right. markets that get all the publicity, those are the ones to really be careful of.
Right, right. Yeah, so what we did is, like, if I can get these guys out there and show them what a $50,000 house or a $40,000 or $30,000 house in Indianapolis or Kokomo is, and how we can buy these for $500, $1,000, $5,000, whatever it may be, and get those returns. I mean, at the end of the day, ROI is ROI, margin is margin. What that means is I got to do a lot more deals just because of the smaller entry points on us. We like saying we're not afraid of work. It just means we got to do more deals, more transactions. But those ROIs are really out of this world. So we put together this roadshow. It says, okay, let me take the and by the way, you know, a $25,000 house in Sullivan, Indiana. Out here, you can't put a roof on your house for $25,000. So you can't dip
In all fairness, you know, those are houses that some of them require major fix up. They've had the piping stolen. They've had the HVAC units stolen. I mean, right? In all fairness, right? You should mention that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. These are not Beverly Hills properties in the middle of the country, without a doubt. At the same time, it's working class blue collar America where, you know, you do get the nuggets. I mean, there's often times that we buy these notes, the properties are intact. Maybe they need $5,000 in cleanup and paint and carpet and whatever. It's not like you're going to buy it for $25,000 and you got to put $100,000 into it. You know, there's great properties out there and not a lot of areas where you get the, we call them the copper goblins going in to strip out everything out of the house. You know, a lot of these communities are better communities. It's just they happen to be, you know, middle America. They can be great areas. So we put together the roadshow. We get investors out. We fly them into whatever market we're looking at. The one that we've had most success is we fly into Chicago. So we spend the first day driving from Chicago through northern Indiana, end up in Indianapolis that night. We're looking at assets all along the way. Then day two, we leave Indianapolis back up into Chicago, cover 700-plus miles in 2 days. Typically looking at anywhere from 30 to 40 assets and actually letting them put their eyeballs. And sometimes we go walking into these properties. You know, if it's a vacant, you know, property and doors unlocked, which is, you know, not all the time, but, you know, often, you know, we find that we can get and see these hoarder houses, these houses that are stripped, these houses that are in perfect condition with the little toy bunny rabbit still sitting in the corner where, you know, you can just see what happened and how mom picked up and left for whatever reason. Or you see the guy sitting in front that you know can modify him because he's sitting out there with his kids playing and he just needs that second chance. It's a very unique, nobody else does it like this, notes, very unique way to have investors put eyeballs on the assets and get comfortable. This is the important part, getting comfortable with the areas that they're going to be investing in or we're going to be investing in. Not necessarily that we say that to look at every asset, but, you know the areas. You know, you go into Kokomo, you know, I love Kokomo. Kokomo is a phenomenal area to be buying in. You know, see what's going on. It's a community that's on the upswing, not a downswing. So you don't see that on Zillow. You don't see that on Google Earth. And unless you're combing news channels, you're not going to see it. And so it really brings value to take them out there looking at that. So we have assets that, you know, we may own, or we might have some of my hedge fund buddies give us, and where they're exclusive to us. And by the end of the 3 days, we're taking people and they're buying their first notes, and whether that's for $1,000 or $100,000, you know, whatever it is. So it's a real successful way of getting somebody to actually take that step and actually get into the business for the first time, or they've dabbled in, now they want to get serious about it. So we give them that kind of PhD education in notes.
Any thoughts on where the market is going overall? When I asked you about the shadow inventory, you know, I think it's just really hard to get good statistics and good numbers on that. Because a lot of it works out and, you know, there are so many issues with shadow inventory there. You know, any thoughts on where the market's going in general? I mean, you know, of course, very different markets in high-flying places like Southern California and, you know, solid, linear, Midwestern types of markets.
The beginning of 2014, according to reports, there was like just over 9 million defaulted mortgages. As of quarter three, there's somewhere between 7 and 8 million defaulted mortgages. So again, California's rebounded pretty nicely, but although there's still a lot of people in trouble. Florida's rebounded, like Dade and Broward counties rebounded nicely, although there's still people in trouble. But in between there and here, there's still a lot of homeowners. Again, you know, Ohio, Indiana, Chicago, they didn't appreciate 40%. They appreciated 2%, 3%, normal appreciation. So there's still a lot of underwater people that are still lost in the system. So 3 years ago, I said we had about a 3 to 5 year window to take advantage of this. If you talk to the other guys out there that know the business pretty well, they'll say the same thing along with me. We probably still have another 3 to 5 years. There's just so much out there that still has to be worked through. HUD has 750,000 mortgages that have to be sold over the next 10 years that they're, you know, they have a pretty robust program getting them out there. So there's just a lot of inventory. The price points are getting squeezed a little bit. You know, there's more people getting into the business. We're doing a good job teaching our investors, so we're creating kind of our own competition a little bit. But there's still a phenomenal opportunity, at least for the next 3 to 5 years.
What's the origination date of most of the loans you're buying or recommending your investors buy?
They're all from the height of the market. I would say the majority of them are probably from 2000 up to, you know, 2007 when everything blew up. There's a handful of them that are, you know, in somewhere in the, you know, late 90s.
And aren't you concerned about the Dodd-Frank revisions that came in 2010?
No, you know what? Because, again, our model, you think about it. If you're the fund that's going to go after the homeowner to foreclose on the property, then you're going to run into the issues. But when Marlowe goes knocking on the door and they answer the door and it's like, hi, I'm Mark, I'm your new lender, and, you know, they haven't talked to their lender in 4 years, of course, the thing that comes out of their mouth is, uh-oh, right? They found me. And I'm like, no, this isn't an uh-oh moment. This is a hallelujah moment because I'm the guy that's here. If you've got, like I said before, if they have the capacity and the desire, I'm keeping them in the house and I'm giving them the fresh start. So we've literally only had, I want to say a dozen, you know, over 2 years, only about a dozen where it turned into something where we had to go down a full bore, you know, just a full bore foreclosure because they just didn't want to, you know, again, foreclosure, we foreclosed because they're dead, you know, the or might be dead or they're going through bankruptcy and you have to do that because their attorney doesn't want them to do deed in lieu. But there's just a very few where they're actually, you know what, to hell with you, you foreclose, kick me out. So when you go in with that attitude, we really found that most of the people want to be helped and willing to help them.
Yeah, good stuff. Good to know. Give out your website if you would.
Yes, American Home Recovery Fund. So it's AHR, so AppleHotelRadarFund.com. The roadshow, we got a pretty unique. We have some cool videos. You'll want to check out a couple of these. We stumbled on homes that are sitting in the middle of a cemetery, and we got some pretty cool. We brought a film crew with us. That's at note.guru, .com. It's note.guru. And that's all the stuff about the Shadow Inventory Roadshow.
Closing thoughts on investment advice or market direction or anything you want to mention. I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, just again, it's all about notes and everything that we do, as corny as it may sound. You know, I'm a veteran. I'm a disabled veteran, and we have a special place in what we do on trying to stabilize the homeowners, you know, through no fault of their own, not trying to pin blame on the banks or the homeowners. You know, homeowners were not the best at what they were doing either. What we do is really try to help keep homeowners in there, and collectively, all the other investors out there, if we band together, we're going to help right the ship. Things are getting better in certain areas, but the rest of the country is really still in trouble. So we really love teaching investors that we can make these amazing returns and still help, you know, help Americans stay in their homes. So, you know, we definitely love talking with people, giving those case studies, showing them how we do this, and really just trying to build the bandwidth to help as many homeowners as we can.
Good stuff. Mark Gold, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Here's your chance to catch up on all of those Creating Wealth shows that you've missed. There's a 3-book set with shows 1 through 60, all digital download. You save $94 by buying this 3-book set. Go ahead and get these advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.